Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this next half-hour segment, we're going to explore a recent incident, and I'm speaking now in March of 1998, a recent incident in which a former Aryan Nations, or perhaps former belongs in quotes, operative, and an individual in Nevada, Las Vegas, who operates a fire protection business, were accused of harboring military-grade anthrax. There was quite a stir in the news media about this. Ultimately, it came out that they apparently had a vaccine. However, I think this is an event that warrants far more scrutiny than it has received in the mainstream media, and needless to say, in the so-called alternative progressive media as well. And as always, note the use of the term so-called. This first article comes from the San Francisco Examiner of Friday, February 20th of 1998. This is an article by Michael Sangiacomo, S-A-N-G-I-A-C-O-M-O, of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. It's headlined, Anthrax Suspect Wrote of Germ Warfare. One of two arrested penned booklet warning about threat of danger from Iraq. The article reads in part as follows. One of the men arrested by the FBI near Las Vegas on a charge of possessing a lethal biological agent has been warning since 1995 that Americans face the threat of a bacteriological attack from Iraq, or even the U.S. government. Larry Wayne Harris, a microbiologist from Lancaster, Ohio, wrote a 38-page booklet in 1995 asserting the danger of terrorist attacks by Iraq and telling people how to survive a biological attack. He has claimed that Iraqi agents have stockpiled biological agents in the United States, and he has boasted of how easy it is to cultivate and release the deadly anthrax germ. Harris and William Levitt, who owns biology laboratories in Logandale, Nevada, and Frankfurt, Germany, were charged Thursday with conspiracy to possess a biological agent for use as a weapon. Note that Levitt also has a laboratory in Frankfurt, Germany. We're going to come back to that a little bit later. Skipping down in this article, again from the San Francisco Examiner of 2/20/98, we read of Larry Harris. Harris, identified by the FBI as a member of the white supremacist Aryan Nations, was previously given 18 months probation after pleading guilty to illegally obtaining bubonic plague bacteria through the mail in 1995. Last year, he pleaded guilty to one count of wire fraud for claiming that he was buying the pathogens for a laboratory where he worked. He was ordered to stop telling people that he works for the CIA. Aryan Nations founder Richard Butler said Thursday that Harris joined the group in the early 1990s and left in 1995. Harris said in January that he had learned of an alleged plot by Iraqis to unleash biological agents inside the United States through an Iraqi student he met at Ohio State University and had confirmed the story with the CIA, for whom he claims to have worked. Since the Iraq War, they had thousands of Iraqi students going to college in the United States to... smuggle biological weapons into the country in their body cavities, unquote, he said at the time. Again quoting, one woman, the Ohio State University student, was arrested as a courier. She had anthrax, bubonic plague, typhoid, and cholera germs on her when she was arrested. She told authorities that there are agents all over the United States with these biological weapons, just waiting for the word to release them. I wrote a civil defense booklet telling people how to prepare for this, but I can't get the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, interested in letting people know about it. People must be made aware of the danger, unquote. The booklet, Bacteriological Warfare, A Major Threat to North America, What You and Your Family Can Do Defensively Before and After, unquote, sells at survivalist expositions and gun shows for $25. The book is cast as instructions on how to survive a biological attack. But the Klan Watch Project of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which monitors domestic hate groups, contends it's basically a how-to manual. Skipping down. In a 1996 interview on The Intelligence Report, unquote, a shortwave radio program produced by Wolverine Productions, Harris talked at length about how to reconstitute dehydrated anthrax and bubonic plague bacteria and distribute them in major U.S. cities through the exhaust systems of cars and airplanes. Wolverine Productions is run in Ann Arbor, Michigan, by Mark Kornke, a survivalist with ties to militia groups. Kornke's name also surfaced briefly in connection with the Oklahoma City bombing, although later it was maintained that he was not involved with that particular event. I would also note that Larry Harris claims to have worked for the CIA. Stranger things have certainly happened. The intelligence services of this country, CIA in particular, have certainly not shied away from hiring Nazis in the past. However, I would also note that many right-wing extremist groups are, as a matter of almost routine now, claiming that the government was actually behind the acts that they've been involved in. And I would note that there is a considerable degree of penetration of many official bureaus, police agencies, governmental agencies, and so forth, by many of those white supremacist groups, some of whom have been used as mercenaries in the past. One area of historical overlap between the world of covert operations, the world of white supremacist groups, and the probable use of anthrax as a biological weapon was the long civil war in Zimbabwe, the former British colony of Rhodesia. The U.S. had a covert operation there, and they utilized white supremacists as mercenaries in that particular conflict. And there was an article by Dr. Merrill Nass in Covert Action Quarterly back in 1993. Actually, it might have been a different year, but there was an article by Dr. Merrill Nass talking about the anthrax epizootic in Zimbabwe during that time. It appears that anthrax was deliberately spread in an attempt to decimate the rural support network for the guerrillas who ultimately were successful in their civil war. So I should note, simply as a matter of record, that there is at least one instance of an apparent overlap between these three entities, namely the world of covert operations, white supremacists, and the use of anthrax as a biological weapon. I would also note, however, that the claim that the government did it is frequently being surfaced now during the course of or in the wake of acts of right-wing terror or apparent acts of right-wing terror. I would refer interested listeners to a recent two-hour segment update on the Oklahoma City bombing for a more in-depth discussion of some of the complexities involved in this admittedly murky world. More about Larry Harris and some of the things that he has threatened to do in the past. By the way, note that he was he pleaded guilty to one count of wire fraud for acquiring bubonic plague bacteria in the past. Research credit on the following goes to a listener who got this from the Las Vegas Sun's website. This is an article by Robert Macy, M-A-C-Y, of the Associated Press. It's datelined Las Vegas, and it's February 19, 1998. The headline, Anthrax Suspects Appear in Federal Court. Skipping down, we read, in background information to the affidavit, the FBI said that last summer, Harris described plans for the New York attack. This is a plan to attack the New York City subway with biological agents. Continuing, Harris told a group of plans to place a, quote, globe, unquote, of bubonic plague toxins in a New York subway station, where it would be broken by a passing subway train, causing hundreds of thousands of deaths, Harris stated, causing hundreds of thousands of deaths. Harris stated that the Iraqis would be blamed for that event. Please note that. The affidavit added, quote, Harris had stated that the New York subway attack would ruin the economy and take the military by surprise, unquote. Separately, in an interview with the AP, Daniel Burns, B-U-R-N-S, managing editor of KVBC-TV, said chief photographer Mark Renfro, R-E-N-F-R-O, ran into Levitt and Harris at a Radio Shack in Las Vegas Monday night. The men were shopping for a police scanner and were looking for radar detectors and globe-shaped static electricity toy. It should have been and a globe-shaped static electricity toy. There's an editorial mistake there. I would note that ultimately the, quote, military-grade anthrax, unquote, that they supposedly had turned out to be a vaccine for anthrax and harmless in and of itself. We're going to discuss more of in that context a little bit later. But I would note in this regard that if the men were shopping for a police scanner, looking for radar detectors and a globe-shaped static electricity toy, it is difficult to imagine how any of those items would fit into the context of creating a vaccine. So please note that for the record. We're going to come back to that element of discussion a little bit later. Whatever Larry Harris may or may not be, he is certainly not shy. The San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, February 20th of 1998, carries the following story. This is by Kevin Fagan, Susan Sward, S-W-A-R-D, and Bill Wallace of the Chronicle staff. It's dateline Las Vegas and headlined, Anthrax Scare, Two Held. Pair charged with possessing deadly bacteria. And this is a discussion of the arrest of these two individuals, and By the way, reading about the background of these two people, beginning with this article, a Nevada businessman and a microbiologist who once allegedly bragged of a plan to attack New York subways with bubonic plague were charged yesterday with possessing deadly anthrax bacteria for use as a weapon. FBI agents arrested Larry Wayne Harris, 46, and an associate, William Job Levitt, or Job Levitt, L-E-A-V-I-T-T, Jr., 47, on Wednesday night outside a clinic in the town of Henderson, southwest of Las Vegas. Harris of Lancaster, Ohio, had boasted earlier that he possessed enough anthrax, a bacteria almost always fatal to humans, to, quote, wipe out Las Vegas, according to court documents. The FBI said they had no evidence that Harris, who claims to belong to the neo-Nazi Aryan Nations group, and Levitt of Logandale, Nevada, had a specific target. But the pair's arrest raised new concerns about the possibility that domestic terrorists have the capability to launch a biological warfare attack. Please note that, although they supposedly had a harmless anthrax vaccine, that capability should not be too easily dismissed, particularly in light of some of the statements that Larry Harris has made. Harris also attracted considerable notoriety last year with his comments to U.S. News and World Report. Quote, "If they arrest a bunch of our guys, they get a test tube in the mail," he said. "Worse could come," he predicted. "How many cities are you willing to lose before you back off? If these guys want to go off to the Northwest and have five states declared to be their own free and independent country, let them do it," unquote. This, of course, is a reference to the Northwest Imperative. White supremacists and Nazi elements are looking to establish an independent white state in the Pacific Northwest involving Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and apparently British Columbia as well. There may be one other state in there as well. Please note that again. And also note the dire nature of the potential threat. I would not take those statements too lightly. The overlap between Nazi activity in this country and international Nazi activity and support for Saddam Hussein also should not come as a great surprise. In a couple of segments dealing with how Saddam Hussein acquired his weapons of mass destruction, I've described the Nazi influence on Saddam Hussein and the Ba'ath Party, as well as talking about the companies that were involved with giving Saddam Hussein his CBW and nuclear capabilities. Many of those companies were some of the companies that I spoke about in May of 1980, almost 18 years ago, as having been some of the same companies involved with the arming and political support of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich. Many of those companies were part of what I have referred to as a transatlantic financial and industrial axis involving an intersection between corporate America and corporate Germany, though many of those corporate interests instrumental in not only assisting the rise of fascism, but in Germany, that is, but also the rise of fascism in Italy. Numerous programs available from Spitfire, a tape duplication service that I will tell you about, time permitting, at the end of this program, discuss many of those fascist connections and so some of the American and Western corporate links to the Third Reich. And again, many of those same companies have been instrumental in arming Saddam Hussein with his weapons of mass destruction. And many of the companies that I spoke about on May 23rd, 1980, in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika broadcast, by the way, subtitled U.S. Industrial Support for Nazi Germany, many of those same companies are now defendants in a class action suit that has been filed by veterans of the Persian Gulf War who are suffering from Gulf War syndrome. Those segments, again, and the attendant documentation, also the original Uncle Sam and the Swastika archive show with numerous supplements that I've added since, those are available from Spitfire. Of the support that was given to Saddam Hussein during the Gulf War by international Nazi elements, including and especially German Nazi elements, we're now going to discuss that and we're going to provide documentation from the vitally important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, by Martin A. Lee. This book was published in hardcover by Little Brown Books and copyright 1997. The ISBN number I will have right here for you in just a second. The ISBN number is 0-316-51959-6. And of German Nazi support for Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War, Martin Lee writes as follows in The Beast Reawakens. As the United States rattled its saber and threatened Baghdad, Michael Kunin, K-U-H-N-E-N, contacted the Iraqi embassy in Bonn. By the way, Michael Kunin was one of the top German, contemporary German Nazi leaders. His overtures, continuing with Lee's text, his overtures culminated in a memorandum of agreement with Iraqi officials, which stipulated that Baghdad would finance and equip an anti-Zionist legion composed of neo-Nazi mercenaries from Germany and other countries. This so-called International Freedom Corps was supposed to assist Iraq if it came under attack by the United States. Kunin, the designated commander of the volunteer brigade, praised Saddam Hussein as a freedom fighter. Quote, "We have common ideals, the creation of living spaces for different people and races in accordance with their own culture and tradition," unquote. Referring to Kuwait as, quote, "the Silesia of Iraq," unquote, Kunin claimed that Arabs were not Marxists but nationalists, quote, "just like we are," unquote. Moreover, they had the same enemy, quote, "the United States and its backers, the Zionist forces," unquote. But the martial prowess of the neo-Nazis who pretentiously strutted around Baghdad in SS uniforms left much to be desired. As soon as the bombs started to fall on the Iraqi capital, Kunin's motley delegation scurried back to Europe. By the way, I would add, I wonder if perhaps some of them did stay to fight. I wonder if perhaps some of them had some biological weapons they may have deployed on behalf of Saddam Hussein. That is pure speculation on my part. There may be nothing to that, but I do wonder about that. I would not sell these people short. Continuing with Martin Lee's text, Kunin and his clique were not the only fascists who supported Saddam during the 1991 Gulf War. The Republikaner Party dispatched a representative to Baghdad, where he was warmly received by Iraqi leaders. By the way, I would interrupt to add that the Republikaner Party is headed up by Franz Schoenhuber, a former Waffen-SS officer. Continuing, Jean-Marie Le Pen of the French Front National also got the red carpet treatment when he met Saddam. And several British neo-Nazis ventured to Iraq shortly before the onset of the American-led Blitzkrieg. South African white supremacists sent messages of support to Saddam as well. Not surprisingly, Kunin was quick to applaud when Iraqi scuds began hitting Israel. Even if Saddam Hussein used biological and chemical weapons, the German neo-Nazi chief maintained, he deserved respect for standing up to the United States. I would also note, too, the distinctly anti-American tone that German Nazi propaganda and discussion has taken. That also is discussed in a half-hour segment that discusses the hiring of Manfred Raeder, a German Nazi terrorist who was convicted of planting a fatal bomb that killed a couple of Vietnamese immigrants. He was in 1995 hired to lecture to the elite German Officers Academy, and the Bundeswehr, the German army, also bequeathed his Nazi organization some trucks and obsolete vehicles. So again, note the areas of overlap between support for Saddam Hussein by international fascist elements, their anti-Americanism, as well as their obvious anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and note also the applauding by Michael Kunin of the prospect of Saddam Hussein using biological weapons. When we see someone of Larry Harris's background threatening to use biological weapons in the United States, whether in retaliation for the arrest of white supremacists, or in order to create a state of emergency which would ruin the economy and which would be blamed on Iraq, one should not take such things lightly, and beyond that, it should not appear altogether strange to the uninitiated. Well, it should not appear strange. Eventually, it turned out that what had been represented by an informant as, quote, military-grade anthrax, unquote, was not actually military-grade anthrax. That the military-grade anthrax, unquote, eventually turned out to be a harmless vaccine was discussed in, among other newspapers, the San Francisco Examiner of Sunday, February 22nd of 1998. This is an L.A. Times story by Tom Gorman. It's headlined, "False Alarm in Anthrax Arrests." Subtitled, "Material in Vials was a Non-Lethal Form of a Veterinary Vaccine." The article reads in part as follows. "The anthrax scare that rattled this city turned out to be a false alarm. The FBI has here announced curtly Saturday that the material taken from two men who allegedly claimed they had enough anthrax to, quote, wipe out the city, unquote, had turned out to be a harmless veterinary vaccine." Skipping down, "The FBI Saturday continued to stand by its criminal complaint allegation that Levitt had boasted in a conversation overheard by agents that he possessed, quote, military-grade, unquote, anthrax bacteria, which can be lethal in any amounts. It certainly is gratifying that this was not military-grade anthrax, unquote. However, I would also note that both Leavitt and Larry Harris claimed that they had no malevolent intent and were simply trying to develop a vaccine for anthrax. One wonders what a police scanner and some of that other equipment that they had, the globe of static electricity and radar detectors, would help them do develop a vaccine. I also wonder to what extent that this incident may have been intended to deliver a warning to people in high places, and perhaps also to discredit the FBI, a much-despised institution, to the white supremacists. I would also note, too, that Mr. Leavitt, who ran a fire protection business, had a laboratory in Frankfurt, Germany. And I would also note that a laboratory that can be used to produce vaccines can be used to produce deadly biological agents as well. I'm going to reprise a section of an article that I read in one of the half-hour segments talking about the overlap between the companies that helped to arm Hitler in World War II and some of the companies that helped to give Saddam Hussein his CBW capability. I would also note that a German corporation, the Merck Company, is going to be vaccinating all active-duty U.S. service personnel against anthrax. Reading now from Newsweek magazine's issue of November 24, 1997. This is an article by Jeffrey Cowley, C-O-W-L-E-Y, and Adam Rogers. It's headlined, "The Terrors of Toxins," subtitled, "The Science Behind Saddam's Scary Weapons." And in this article, there's a quote from Colonel David Franz, commander of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, which, by the way, cohabits Fort Detrick with the National Cancer Institute's Molecular Oncology Facility. And quoting David Franz, "What's more, any laboratory equipped to make vaccines can easily churn out deadly biological material," unquote. A U.N. inspector may think everything is fine if he visits on the day you're producing vaccine, unquote, Franz says. Again quoting, "A week later, you can be producing biological warfare agents," unquote. Again, I would take that into the into consideration as we evaluate the claims by Harris and Leavitt that they were simply out to develop a harmless vaccine. The same facilities that can be used to develop vaccines can be used to develop lethal agents as well. I also found a detail concerning the Frankfurt, Germany laboratory that was owned by Leavitt somewhat disconcerting. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this off of the Reuters webpage. This is a Reuters story datelined February 21st in Germany, and it's headlined, "German Police Working with FBI in Anthrax Case." It reads in part as follows. "German authorities said on Saturday they were working with the FBI to locate a laboratory which U.S. officials believe is linked to one of two men arrested for allegedly planning to make biological weapons. Police in the central German state of Hesse said they had no evidence about the lab, which the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the United States said was located in Frankfurt, Germany's financial center. Quote, we have no additional information today, and if there is news, it will probably come out of the United States, unquote, a spokesman for Hesse's Criminal Investigations Office told Reuters. Skipping down, getting any information about the investigation in Germany was made more difficult with the country celebrating its annual carnival, a rowdy five-day festival with parades and masquerading. The FBI said Leavitt owned a lab in Logandale, Nevada, and another in Frankfurt. But German police and media have so far failed to find the Frankfurt lab. The Hesse spokesman said German police were not even sure if the lab was located in Frankfurt am Main, the banking center in western Germany, or Frankfurt unter Oder on Germany's eastern border with Poland. One of the things that I find disconcerting about the German police's apparent failure to locate the laboratory is that, in the first place, the Germans are nothing if not a thorough people. And the situation in Germany is not one in which people simply come and go and get lost in the shuffle. Every citizen in Germany is required to register with the police. And if you move from one town to another, that has to be duly communicated to the authorities. The notion that a foreign national could own a laboratory in Germany, a biological laboratory, in particular if it was in Frankfurt, Germany's financial center, and that would not be known to the German authorities is difficult to imagine. Given the fact that every citizen has to register with the police, I think it is an unlikely prospect that a biological laboratory owned by a foreign national, particularly an American, and Americans are not exactly beloved in Germany these days, the notion that such a laboratory would escape police detection, and the German police are extremely capable and very formidable when they wish to be, is disconcerting. One wonders whether perhaps there's more to that laboratory than we have been told, and whether it has connections of one type or another that are being covered up. Obviously, this is a speculative element, but the notion that such a laboratory could escape the detection of the German police is a notion that I find rather difficult to accept under the circumstances. I alluded earlier to a tape duplication service that stocks all of the various archive programs that I've done, as well as the half-hour segments that I've done, most of the lecture tapes, the tapes of the lectures that I've done, and the weekly One Step Beyond shows from my home base station, KFJC-FM. That tape duplication service is called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. That mailing address again, Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, zip code 95005. There's an email address for Spitfire, ALCALAME, that's ALCALAME, at ix.netcom.com. Once again, ALCALAME, at ix.netcom.com. There is a list of and description of all of the programs available from Spitfire, with the exception of the lecture tapes. I have yet to get those up on the website. And the list of and description of all of those tapes, plus a suggested reading list, is on the KFJC-FM webpage. Point your web browser at www.kfjc.org. Once again, www.kfjc.org, and look in the public affairs section. I would also note that people whose computers are equipped to handle audio can also listen to the long broadcast that I do beginning at 7 p.m. Pacific time in California. I also have an email address, by the way, for people who want to contact me by email. It's at the station. It's demory at kfjc.org. Once again, demory at kfjc.org. By way of concluding this segment and looking toward the next segment, National Vanguard Books, which is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important of the domestic Nazi groups, has put out a number of different books, including a book called Serpent's Walk, which purports to be a novel. It talks about the descendants of the SS going underground, infiltrating the United States Army, putting together a huge capital organization which buys into the American opinion-forming media and begins to sway public opinion, and after a biological attack by genetically engineered microorganisms, specifically genetically engineered viruses, ostensibly of Russian origin, which wipes out much of the population, including the President and Vice President of the United States, the Speaker of the House, who was an ally of this underground Reich, takes over. He becomes President and invites them into a ruling coalition, and they take over the United States. We're going to talk about that book, Serpent's Walk, in our next half-hour segment. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.